Ta looked at his watch, sighed wearily, and climbed laboriously from his bunk in the Field Force depot in Bako. He was getting too old for this sort of life, he thought. He pulled on a shirt, draped a blanket round his shoulders against the chill of the dawn air, and walked out onto the veranda where, as he had expected, Mamadou Djibang was listening to the radio. Djibang looked up at Tal with what could charitably be described as a wry smile. "We didn't even make the well service news this morning," he said. "As far as the world is concerned, it's all over." "The BBC is not the world," Tal said shortly, and sat down on a chair beside Jabang's. "I know, I know." Jabang gestured towards the map, which had been spread across the table. "Tell me the situation," he said. "Can we hold the position we have for a few days?" Tal shrugged. "We can try, but if they are hesitating because of the hostages, then perhaps we should encourage them to think the worst," Jabang said. "This morning I shall talk to the Senegalese commander and give a good impersonation of a deranged terrorist who thinks nothing of killing Jawara's family and 100 white tourists. Then maybe we can negotiate some sort of amnesty for our people, yes?" "Now," McGrath said, "how do you lads feel like a little exercise?"
"Okay," one council member said. "But what do we want? What are we negotiating for?"
"Our freedom," Jabang replied.
"Free passage out of the country." "To where?"
"That will depend on which countries are prepared to accept us," Tal interjected. "But in any case, first we have to establish their principle."
"That's true,"
Jabang conceded.
"And to establish that principle, we must make Jawara fear the consequences of refusal."
McGrath brought the jeep to a halt on the side of the open road. "We'd better walk from here," he said. "No point in giving the enemy the idea that anything's happening." The other three got out. A cool breeze seemed to be blowing in from the ocean, which by Kasky's reckoning was a mile or so ahead of them. "Ready?" Kasky asked. He had made it clear to McGrath, in as friendly a manner as he could manage, that the SAS group in the Gambia had only one boss, himself. He was the one who was responsible to Brian Whale, and ultimately to the British government. As long as McGrath understood and accepted that, he was more than welcome to join the party. "You're the boss," McGrath had agreed, and only time would tell if he meant it. "You take lead, Scout Simon," Kasky said, organizing the four men along standard SAS lines. "Joss, Tail and Charlie." As leader, he would take up the second position, with responsibility for the left flank. Franklin would come third and cover the right. For the moment, while they were supposedly in friendly territory, there was unlikely to be any danger, but it paid to be careful. They skirted the outer edge of the hotel car park. McGrath led the way through a gap between two outbuildings, cautiously opened a squeaky gate, and found himself skirting a swimming pool.